We're in the middle of talking. We're holding on Samach Gimel Amud Beis, seven lines from the bottom, eight lines from the bottom. A line begins Ein Nimlochin. We're in the middle of talking about the case of a meredes, a woman who goes on strike against her husband. We had a machlokas yesterday whether we mean a strike that she refuses to have tashmish, or does it also mean? We said in the end, everybody agrees that that's considered meredes. And we had a machlokas, Rav Huna and Rav Yosi, Rav Chanina, whether also if she's murdered from malacha, if she's refusing to do malacha, is that considered meredes? And then within that, we talked about a machlokas Rishonim, what malacha do we mean? Do we mean the housework, or do we mean the work that she does, spinning wool, as we're going to learn about later on Samach Dalet Amud Beis, which she does in order to contribute to the family income. Good morning, Avraham Moshe. We're holding eight good lines morning. From the bottom on Samach Gimel Amud Beis. So the Gemara says, Heichi Damya Meredes. What exactly do we mean by a Meredes? Meaning, yes, we know what it means, what she's refusing to do. But what's the what are the reasons behind that she's giving behind what she's doing? So Amra Mema de Amra Ba'inale, she's saying, I do want him, I do want to stay married to him. But I'm going on strike in order to make him uncomfortable. So for example, she might be saying, let's say my husband is not treating me right, he's doing whatever, and therefore on my part, I'm going on strike against him. So that would be the kind of case where our Mishnah was saying that. So we had first our Mishnah had said that that you deduct a certain amount from her ksuba every week. In hopes that that'll get her to, that'll induce her to do the right thing and make up with her husband. And then we said in the Gemara that Rabbi Seinu said differently. They said that what you do is they give her 4 weeks worth of warnings. And then if she doesn't, if she's still not doing what she's supposed to, then we tell her she's forfeited her entire ksuba. So now all of that then would only apply where she says, I want to stay married to him. So then when we start deducting her ksuba or threatening to take away her ksuba entirely, then that may make her change her mind. Aval Amra Moisalai, but if she says that he's repulsive to me, I don't need him, I don't need his ksuba, I just want out, loy kaifinin la, then we don't force her. Now, here you have two different girsas. The girsa we have in front of us in the Gemara is loy kaifinim la, that we don't force her, we don't compel her, which means then Rashi says that in that case, then he just gives her a get and she just leaves without a ksuba. Now, the Rambam paskins more explicitly that way. He says that if she says mori salai, that he's repulsive to me and I can't bear the thought of having relations with him or anything, then we say that's grounds for him to divorce her and that's that. So the Rambam clearly holds that, and the Ritva explains, based on the wording of Rashi, that Rashi holds that way as well. Most of the other Rishonim disagree with that, and they say that, and Tosfos, for example, discusses here at some length, different other Rishonim discuss it as well. They have a different girsa, not loy kaifinim la, but loy kaifinim lay. We don't force him to give her a get as a result of that. Meaning just the opposite. They're saying that if she's saying Mori Salai, that's not a valid reason to require him to give her a get, just because she says, I want out. And in fact, that's the halacha in Shulchan Aruch. You sometimes have, unfortunately, nowadays also, you have cases like that where a woman demands a get because she can't stand her husband anymore. But the halacha is, that's if the husband wants to give her a get, doesn't hate, then let him. But according to the Rambam and according to Rashi, that would be grounds for that kind of thing. Would be grounds for based in to force him to give her a get. But according to the other Rishonim, it would not. And of course, you get into the serious matter of if you force somebody to give a get when he's not required to api alacha, then that get is going to be puzzle. So according to most of the other Rishonim, and that's the halacha, is that you can't do that. Okay, so the Gemara continues. Mazutra ama kaifinin la. Mazutra says we do still compel her even in that case. So according to the other girsa, that maybe that we compel him. And the Gemara says, Hava uvda ba'achfa marzutra. It happened once that there was a woman who said about her husband, Mori Salai, I can't stand him anymore, I want out. And Mazutra compelled her by doing this whole matter of reducing her ksuba. And so the couple ended up reconciling and staying married. The Nafak Minera Khanina Misura. And the result was they had a child who grew up to be Rav Chanina Misura, who was one of the Chachamim. So therefore, that shows that it can be a good thing to do, like Mao Zedong said, to that maybe we should do that all the time and compel her. And you never know. I mean, obviously, in this case, a great Tam Chacham came out of it. Shows, in other words, they fully reconciled. Because otherwise, if they were still on the outs when they had relations and conceived of Chanina, then he wouldn't have grown up to be who he is. The Gemara elsewhere, we'll learn about it in Dorim in a few months, Bez Hashem, talks about that if the couple or if the couple hates one another when they're having relations or different things like that, then the children are going to be no good. Next, here where he grew up to be a great Talmid Chacham, obviously that wasn't the case. So therefore, the Gemara is trying to use that as a proof that you should do that. However, the Gemara says, Valohi, that's not necessarily the case. You wouldn't always say that in a case like that, you compel her to stay with her husband. Hossam, Siyata Dishmaya Hava. In that case, there was particular Siyata Dishmaya that Mao Zedong actually got them to stay together, and it worked out, and they had a great child. But you can't necessarily generalize from that to other cases. Okay. The Gemara continues. Kalse did Rav Zvid Imrida, the daughter-in-law of Rav Zvid, was a meredith. She went on strike against her husband. Have a tfisa chad shira. Now, among the we've learned several times already that when a woman gets married, she brings in assets into the marriage, which many of them become nichsei tzoin barzel. They become nechosim that the husband has full control over them. But when he dies, or if he dies before her, or if they get divorced, then he has to reimburse her for anything that over the years has gotten lost or depreciated or what have you. So in this case, of the Nichsetza and Barzel, she had in her possession one silk coat. So the question is, can she keep that or not? So Yosef Amemo Mazutra and Ravashi. So Amemo Mazutra and Ravashi were sitting together discussing this. The Yosef Rav Gamda Gabayu, and Rav Gamda was sitting together with them. Yasvi v'kahamri, so they were sitting and saying, Murda, that if the woman is a meredis, she goes on strike, and we're gonna and eventually the husband has grounds for divorcing her, hifsida bloiseha kayomi, then she loses, not only she loses her ksuba, based on all the announcements we said, but also what she loses includes also even the worn out items from her nechosim that still exists. In other words, you have like this. So we're saying that she brought these clothing into the marriage as part of her nidunya, as part of her dowry. They figured out the amount. They wrote in the ksuba that he has the full rights to use these things, and he has to reimburse her in the end. Now you still have in this case, for example, the silk coat was one of those things that she had brought in when she first got married. Now it's worn out. It's not in the same shape it was when they first got married, but nevertheless, it still exists. Usually when she gets divorced or when her husband dies, she'd be entitled to keep any of those. And then the husband would have to reimburse her for any loss in value. In this case, the first three chachamim, Amnema, Mazutra, and Rav Ashi are saying that no, actually, when she's meredis, when she's rebelling against her husband, and her husband ends up divorcing her because of that, part of the penalty is that she ends up losing even the blois that are kayomim, even these kinds of things that she to begin with brought in, and they still exist. And you would say, therefore, of course, she ought to be taking them with her. She brought them in, after all, in the first place. But no, in this kind of case, we penalize her and we take those away. So that would mean that this coat she'd have to give back to her husband. But Omalahu Rav Gamda, but Rav Gamda says to the other three Chachamim, how can you say such a thing? Mishum de Rav Zvid Gavra Rabba. Because Rav Zvid is a great person, her father-in-law, Rav Zvid, is a great Talmid Chacham, Machnefisulei. Because of that, you're going to chant for him, you're going to flatter him, and paskin the halacha wrongly in his favor. It's not necessarily the case that she should have to give up the silk coat. After all, Rav Kahana says that Rava asked a question about this, whether in fact she loses Bloy Ser Kayomen or not, and he wasn't able to answer it. So how can you, Amema, Mazutra, and Ravashi, say as a definite thing that she loses those? So you can't necessarily say that. If Rav Zvid wants to take that coat away from her, his son wants to take that coat away from her, we're going to have to bring proof that that's the halacha. The Gemara says, Ikadamri, another version of what happened was the other way around. Yasvi Bakamri, the three Chachamim were sitting and saying, Modaloy Sidablois Kayamin. They were sitting and saying the opposite. That even if she's Modadis, she doesn't lose Bloiser Kayamin. Yes, she loses, she may lose her Ksuba. Yes, she may lose various other things, but if there's any Blois, if there's any of the actual items that she brought in for the Nadunya, then she gets to keep those. And according to that version, Omlahu Rav Gamda, according to that version, Rav Gamda says to them just the opposite. Meshum de Rav Zvid Gavri Rabahu, because Rav Zvid is a great Tamid Chacham, Afchitu Lei Ledina Ilavei, therefore, what are you going to, you're going to turn the judgment against him? Meaning, in other words, yes, we know that he's a great Tamid Chacham. If we tell him that this is the halacha, he's not going to go argue with us on it. But nevertheless, that doesn't mean that that's the halacha, and that should, and should be decided that way, not in his favor. Again, Rav Kahana said that Rava asked about this case and he wasn't able to answer it. So why should we take it away from Rav Zvid or from his family unjustly? Now, Tosfos says, what are you talking about? She has the silk code in her possession. Of course, according to the second version, she should be able to keep it if we have a suffix. So Tosfos says, because what it is there wasn't just this one silk coat. There were a lot of them. So now what it is, so in the first Lashon, then we're saying that, then Rav Gamda is arguing to them that we should take away, that you're saying that we should take away the one coat from her, and Rav Gamda is saying not necessarily. In the second version, he's saying just the opposite. There's all the other ones, which the husband right now is Tofusin, that he has, that right now he has in his possession, according to that, Rav Gamda is telling them not only she should be able to keep the one, not only we should make her give back. So in the second version, where we're saying that she does keep Bloiser Kayomin, which would imply, therefore, whether she has them in her possession or not, that would mean she could even go to that closet and take out all the other silk coats. And Rav Gamda is saying that's not necessarily the case, because that would that the halacha may not be like that. And how can you take them away from Rav Zvid when they're in his rishus? Okay, so the Gemara says, well, the bottom line is we don't have, the halacha has not been established either way. Therefore, if she has possession, if she was tofus, for example, in this case where Rav Zvid's daughter-in-law had the one silk coat that was in her possession, then fine, we won't take it away from her. Loy tufsa, but if she didn't take it, all the other ones that were still in her closet, loy yahavin and law, we don't give to her. So in other words, we say amotz mechavel abarai. Okay, and the Gemara says umashin lo treso yarche shata agita. Now we delay for 12 months before she receives the get. Now, what do we mean 12 months? We've been talking about all this time. We have what it said in On Mishnah that we're gradually deducting from her ksuba. We had Rabbi Seinu in the Gemara yesterday, who said that we warn her four times, and then if she still doesn't listen, then she forfeits her ksuba entirely. What's this 12 months over here? So there are, in fact, a couple of the Rishonim. The Bala Itter, for example, says that this line about the 12 months is actually not from the original Gemara. It was inserted by the Rabbanan Sivaroi as part of a takana that they made. We'll talk about it in a minute. We started talking about yesterday, a takana in that regard that was made by the later Rabbanan Sivaroi. But according to the Itter, there were two takanas. First, there was one, which is in the Gemara over here, that we wait for 12 months. And then, in other words, according to him, there would have been the opinion of the Mishnah that you deduct from Huxuba, the opinion of Rabbi Seinu that you warn her four times and then she loses Huxuba, and then we'd have a further takana over here that the Uli Rabbanan Sivaroi made and wrote into the Gemara over here that you make her wait 12 months. Most of the other Rishonim, though, don't hold that way. Rashi says that what it means is this goes together with what we said in the Mishnah. We said in the Mishnah that we start deducting from Huxuba, but how long can that go on? It can't go on indefinitely like that. Eventually we have to do something. When we consider it, it can take a very long time for Huxuba to get used up. Even a basic Huxuba of 200 at that rate is going to take over half a year before it gets used up. And all the more so, of course, if Huxuba is larger. So therefore, Rashi says the 12 months over here, what we mean is that's the maximum amount of time we're going to wait. So it's not just we keep on deducting from uksuba until it's all gone. What we do is there's a cutoff point. If she still hasn't done anything, if she still hasn't listened by the time we've reached a year, then we just say he has the right to divorce her, and that's that. That's according to Rashi. Actually, we learned the idea that the Gemara said nimlochin ba, that we try to convince her, and part of that convincing is the taking away seven dinner from Huxuba per week. So therefore, Rashi is saying that 12 months is the cutoff point. Now, most of the other Rishonim learn, we talked about yesterday, that Tosfos says that no, the halacha is in fact like Rabbi Senu, we have the four announcements and then she loses Huxuba. So what's this 12 months business? So Tosfos starts discussing, and other Rishonim discuss in more detail. There's a difference. What does she want exactly? We just talked about a couple of minutes ago where you have a case where she says, Moi Salai, she says, I want out. I don't care if I forfeit my ksuba or not. Then I want out. And if it means that I'm not getting ksuba, big deal. I can live with that. So then, according to that, so this business about 12 months would apply if she, so that would apply. If she says, you know what, I don't need the ksuba, so then warning her for 4 weeks, you're going to lose your ksuba, isn't really going to help, because she says, I want out anyway, I don't care about the ksuba, so therefore we delay for 12 months. And the Rashba gives a reason. He says, you had a case, what was happening is that women were getting divorced on the spot, and then afterwards, they were realizing, you know what did I do? I lost my husband and I lost my ksuba. So like this, the Chachamim put in this 12-month thing in order for tempos to cool down a little bit. And then there are different other Rishonim that talk about different other possibilities. The Rosh talks about that even when she wants uksuba, it's not necessarily that the husband divorces her right away. He has to wait 12 months. The Rambam learns that the 12 months is if she wants uksuba. So just the opposite. The Rambam learns, as we said, that if she says, Mori Salai, and I don't care about the uksuba, then fine, he can divorce her right away. But if she's saying, I want my uksuba, then the Rambam says, then we make her wait 12 months. So there are several different opinions about it. Now, in addition, we talked about yesterday, Tosfos had mentioned that there's a takana from the later Rabbanan Sevaroi or early Gaonim, which kind of overlaps because there's different opinions when the period of Rabbanan Sevaroi ended and the Gaonim began. In any case, there's a takana that's mentioned by many of the Gaonim and many of the Rishonim, a takana that was made in the time. They actually give, it's interesting, it's one of the few takanas that we know an actual date, we know an actual year when it was done. They mentioned that it was in the year Tuf Kuf Samach Beis L'Shtaris, 962 years, according to Minyan Shtaris, which begins from when Alexander the Great conquered Eretz Yisrael. In secular dates, it comes out to the year 651. So 1370 years ago, about. So the two Gaonim, the two Rosh Yeshiva of Surah and Pumbedisa at that time were named Rava and Ravuna, not of course the same Rava and Ravuna from the Gemara. These were namesakes of theirs later. They got together and made a takana that in a case of meredes like this, the husband can divorce her right away. And there's a good deal of discussion among the Gaonim and the Rishonim what the reason behind that takana was. One idea being, we talked about yesterday, because Rav Shura Gaon writes in one of his Trugos that there were cases where Jewish women were getting involved with Goyim and using them to put pressure on their husbands to give them a get or whatever. And therefore the Chacham said, rather than the husband having to live through that, fine, let him give her a get right away. A different idea is some of the Gaonim, some of the later Gaonim say the problem was that there were women who were saying, well, if I have to wait 12 months, like it's saying in the Gemara over here, then during that time, I might as well do whatever I want. I might as well be Mizana. I might as well be whatever. And therefore the Chacham said, fine, let her get divorced right away. And that way, at least that takes away the edge of that. So there's a fair amount of discussion about the ins and outs of that. Is that takana in fact binding? It is, after all, from after the time of the Gemara. So therefore, at that point, the Chachamim no longer had the ability to make takanas that are absolutely binding on the whole Jewish people unless they voluntarily accept them. The Rambam, for example, doesn't care much for this takana. On the other hand, many of the other Rishonim do accept it. They say it's everybody's been doing it for hundreds of years. So therefore, that's how it should be. So you have these various possibilities of what actually happens with a meredes. And the Gemara finishes off when we have this 12 months over Hanach Treso Yachi Shata less Lamazoni Mibal. During those 12 months that we're saying that we have to delay the get, then she doesn't get mizonis from the husband during that time, because after all, the whole thing has been triggered by the fact that she's modernist against her husband, and she's obviously not there, and therefore, so they're not living together, they're not having tashmish, they're not doing whatever, so therefore, she's not entitled to mizonis during that time. And again, maybe the idea is that that will also induce her to make up with her husband. Okay, the Gemara continues. Omer of Tuvi Bakisna Omer Shmuel, Kosvin Igeres Mered Al Arusa. Now, if you have the woman as an arusa and she's refusing to actually get married, then we write a letter of meret. Based in, we'll write out a letter, a document saying that she's a meredis and that there are going to be the various consequences, including losing her ksuba. Now, usually an arusa doesn't have a ksuba in effect yet anyway, but you could have sometimes, as we've discussed here and there in the Masechta, that sometimes that the ksuba is written while she's still an arusa and it goes into effect then. So then you can also have that she'll be forfeiting part or all of her ksuba. But Shmuel says, but in kosvin igeres mered al shemeres yavam. But if she's a shemeres yavam, so we're going to see in the Gemara now, we're going to discuss what exactly she wants and what exactly the yavam wants. But right now, we're just saying if she's a shemeres yavam, she's waiting for yibum or chalitza, and she's not, and she doesn't want to go through with it, then Shmuel says we don't write a document of mered about her. We don't consider her to be a meredis for that. So the Gemara says, Meisvi, I have a contradiction. The Braisa that we learned yesterday that talks about more of the dinim of meredes, and that also mentioned Rabbi Seinu and so forth, said, Achas li arusa unasua, the same rules apply whether she's arusa or nasua, afilu nida, even if she's a nida, we said even though she can't do tashmish, we still said there's still pas v'saloi, there's still, normally the husband knows that soon enough she'll be tohor and they'll be able to resume relations, and now it's not. So even if she's sick and she may not be able to do the household work, and even if she's a shemeres yavam, so how can Shmuel go against that braisa and say that a shemeres yavam is not considered a meredes? And the answer is like kasha. There's no contradiction. Kansha tova who? Kansha tova he? There could be where he's being teveya. He's saying let's go through with it. At this point, the Gemara is not distinguishing what he's being teveya for. Right now, of course, there could be that he's saying I want to do yibum, or he could be saying I want to do chalitza. We'll get into that, and we'll get into that in the next lines. But right now, we're saying if he's coming to her and saying let's go through with this, and she's refusing, then we're saying that she'd be considered a meredes. Kansha tova he, as opposed to where she's saying let's do it, and he's refusing, so then she's not considered a meredes. So what does that mean? D'omer of tachlifa barabdimi omer Shmuel, tovahu, if he is demanding that we should do such and such, then niskokin loy, then Beistin will deal with him, and Beistin will hear his niskokin loy means to take the time to listen to his arguments, and on that basis, if it turns out that in fact she's refusing, then we'll write an igeres mered. Tova he, but if she's demanding that we go ahead with this, a niskokin law, then Beistin doesn't deal with her, and Beistin doesn't say that we to write any geras mered to say. Now, we said in the Mishnah that if the husband is murdered against his wife, we start augmenting her ksuba, we start adding to it every week. Here, in the case of a shemeres yavam, we don't do that. Now, why is that? We'll learn further down why that is, why it should be that if he's teveya, then he can consider her a meredis, but vice versa, if she's a teveya, then not. But the Gemara says, okay, b'mayu kimta lahad Shmuel. So what are you telling me? Shmuel's statement saying that we don't write any geras mered for shemeres yavam, meaning that Beistin is not going to hear her out and say, okay, your yavam doesn't want to do anything, therefore let's consider him a mered and let's start increasing your ksuba. So Shmuel is saying we don't do that. And you're saying b'shatavahi, that's talking about where she brought up the case first. Well then, hi koisvini geras mered al arusa. Then why is Shmuel using the expression that to write an igeres mered on the arusa or on the shemeres yavam? According to that, if we're talking about that Shmuel is saying for both the arusa and the shemeres yavam, that we're talking about that they're the ones who are bringing the case, then the igeres mered is not being written on them, meaning against them, just the opposite. It's being written for them. So therefore, Shmuel should have phrased it that Kos v'negedus mered la arusa and not l'shameres yavam. In other words, so if an arusa comes to Beis Din and says, we've been in kedushin for a long time, and now my chosen is getting cold feet and doesn't want to go through with the nisuin, what can you do about it for me? And they write her, so Shmuel would be saying, they write her in negedus mered, they start increasing her ksuba until he changes his mind. On the other hand, Shmuel would be saying, for shameres yavam, you don't do that. Well, then in that case, why the Lashon al arusa or al shemeres yavam, which implies just the opposite. It's being written about them. It's just the opposite. It's being written for them because they're saying that the guy doesn't want to go through with it. Okay, so the Gemara says, Hole kasha, toni la arusa. Okay, that's not a big deal. We can change the wording slightly. And what Shmuel meant was not al arusa or al shemeres yavam, but rather le arusa or le shemeres yavam. Well, then the question becomes, well, in that case, then why would there be a difference? Why by the Shemeres Yavam would we tell her not? Would we tell her you don't have any claim against your Yavam? Damrinala Zil, we tell her go, you don't really have a claim over here. Loi Maskadas, after all, you don't have a mitzvah pruvu. So therefore, the fact that you want to do Yibum and your Yavam doesn't want to, the onus is on him, fine. But you can't say that you have a claim to consider him a murdered and start having the yuksuba increased because of that. Because after all, you don't have a mitzvah approval anyway. If you're waiting, then it's no big deal for you. So arusa nami name a lazil loy maskedus. Nu, can't you say the same thing to an arusa as well? She also does about the same thing. She doesn't have a mitzvah approval. So what's her hurry? So the Gemara says, Ella. Obviously, the answer must be that there can be a case, but bomb machmas tiny. There could be a case where she's coming with a valid tiny. De Amra, she's saying, it's true I don't have a mitzvah pruvu, but after all, I do want children. But in a chutra l'yoda umara l'kvura, I want a staff for my hand and a shovel for my burial. In other words, she's saying, yes, of course, I don't have a technical mitzvah approval, but practically speaking, I want children who will help support me when I'm old, and that eventually, so literally to hold my hand like a walking stick, or more generally to support me, and I want that when I die, there should be somebody available to bury me. So therefore, and that's a valid taina that Beis Din should pay attention to. Now, of course, there can be a case where that's not an issue. First of all, not every woman is going to argue that. But second of all, also, you could have, let's say, that she already has children from a previous marriage. So then she already has somebody to support her and so forth in old age. Well, then the question is, Hachinami Shemeres Yavam B'Val Machas Taina. Nu, and by Shemeres Yavam, can't she have the same argument as well? So still, if we're going to say that that's the case, where she has a valid claim, where she comes to Beis Din and says my chosen or my yavam is refusing to go through with his obligation, and Beis Din is going to say, so what? You don't have a mitzvah pruvu, and she answers back, yeah, but I want to have children for my old age. So why would that be any different with an arusa or shemeres yavam? Why is Shmuel saying that an arusa will, if we're saying now that we're talking about that she's teveya, and we're saying for an arusa will write out an igeres mer and consider her chosin to be a murdered and add to her ksuba, then why not for a shemeres yavam? Wouldn't it be the exact same thing? So no, the Gemara says, never mind that. Ella aidi va'aidi shetavahu. No, forget about this idea about that she brought the case to Beis Din versus he brought the case. Both cases, with the Arusa and the Shemeres Yavam, are talking about where he's bringing her to Beis Din and saying, let's go through with this. And then, therefore, we don't have to change the wording of what Shmuel said. When he says, al Arusa or al Shemeres Yavam, we mean about her, not for her, meaning, in other words, that whether is she going to be considered a Meredes or not. So what's the difference? For like Kasha, kan lachlutz v'kan liyabim. Now again, the question is, Shmuel is saying that a shemeres yavam is not considered a meredes if she refuses to go through with it, whereas we had the braisa before that says that she is. So the difference is whether we're talking about whether he wants to do chalitza or whether he wants to do yibul. So if he wants to do chalitza and she doesn't want, so Rashi learns that the case is he wants to do chalitza and she says instead, no, I want to do yibum. So then we say she can be considered a meredes. That's how Rashi learns. Tosfos learns that no, what it means is that it means that he wants to do chalitza. She doesn't want to do either one. She refuses to go through with chalitza. She also doesn't want to do yibum. So then in that case, so either way, according, so either way, where he's saying, let's do chalitza, then if she doesn't want to, then if she doesn't want to, then we consider her a, merdedes. But kan liyabim, as opposed to if he wants to do yibum, then that's where we say what Shmuel is saying, she's not considered a merdedes because of that, for reasons that the Gemara is going to explain in another line. The Amr of Pedos, Amr of Yechanan, as in fact, we find that Pedos says in the name of Rabbi Yechanan, that exact distinction. Tova lachloitz, if the Yavam brings her to Beis Din and says, let's go through with the Chalitza, and she doesn't want, Nizkokin loy, then Beis Din will hear him out and declare her a Meredes if necessary. Tova the Yavam, ain't Nizkokin loy, but if he says, I want to do Yibum, then Beis Din will not get involved with him for reasons that we're going to discuss soon. Well, the question is why? Maishno the Yavam deloy, why is it if he wants to do Yibum, well, then Beis Din will tell him we're not going to bother. Work it out with her yourself. And we say to him, big deal. If she doesn't want to do yibum, no big deal. Zilvanosiv itzachriti. So fine, just go marry some other woman. You don't have to. Eventually, you have to do yibum or chalitza with her. Fine, but meanwhile, you don't have to be stuck. Meanwhile, there's other women out there that you can marry. Well then, lachlitz nami, namely zilvanosiv itzachriti. So why can't we say the same thing with chalitza? She's refusing to do chalitza. According to Rashi, she's demanding Yibum. According to Tosfos, she's saying, I don't want to do either. Still, why should Beis Din say we have to consider her a Meredes? Let them tell him, you know what? Fine, forget about her for right now. Go marry somebody else. Eventually, she'll give in and be willing to do, and then be willing to do Yibum or Chalitza as the case may be. So why would we say that one's different than the other? Ella, obviously the answer is that in the case of Yibum, he's going to say, Kiven da'agida bi, since she's tied to me, she has a zika with me after all, she can't marry anybody else until we do Yibum or Chalitza. Loi kayavu li'achriti. Nobody else is going to be interested in marrying me because they're going to say, sooner or later, this guy is likely to do Yibum with this Yivama. And now, if I marry him now, then a woman or her father, if the woman is younger or whatever, is likely to think to herself, well, then why should I bother? Eventually, I'm going to end up having a tsara. I'm going to end up having a second wife in the household together with me, as we learned throughout Yivamas. And therefore, nobody's going to want to marry me in the first place. So the Yavam can argue that. He can say, as long as this matter is still up in the air, nobody else is interested in marrying me because potentially there could end up being a matter of a tzara over here. Well, then, hochanami, nu, doesn't that apply in the case of chalitza as well? Can he have the same argument? The fact is, even if he's saying he wants to do chalitza, but as long as he hasn't done chalitza, there is always the possibility that yibum might happen, and therefore nobody wants to marry him in between. So why should Beis Din pay more attention to him in the one case than in the case where he wants to do chalitza versus then in the case he wants to do yibum? Either way, you have the same problem, that Beis Din can't just tell him, go marry somebody else. He can answer back, nobody's going to be interested in marrying me as long as this whole situation is up in the air. So no, never mind that answer about chalitza versus yibum. Ela, aidi va'aidi shetova liyabim. Both cases, both the Braisa and Shmuel are talking about where he's demanding of her, let's do Yibum, and she's refusing. So, okay, so why is it then that the Braisa considers her a Meredes and Shmuel not? Well, like Kasha, can Commissioner Rishona, can Commissioner Achrona? It depends whether we're talking about according to the Mishnah Rishona, the original Din, or the Mishnah Achrona, or what the Chachamim changed their mind and passed differently. The Tanan, we learn in a Mishnah. Now, we learned this in Yevamos. Mitzvahs Yibum kodemus la mitzvahs chalitza. The mitzvah of Yibum takes precedence over the mitzvah of chalitza, meaning the preferred thing to do is Yibum, and chalitza is only a backup if they're not able to or whatever, if it's not good to do Yibum in that case. That was Barishona, that was originally, Shoyim Miskavnim Lashum Mitzvah, where they were doing Yibum for the sake of the mitzvah. Achshav She'en Miskavnim Lashum Mitzvah, but nowadays, since they're not having in mind for the mitzvah, they're having in mind other considerations. Omru, so the Chacham said, Mitzvah Chalitza, Kedemus La Mitzvah Yibum, and then Mitzvah Chalitza takes precedence. So we learned in Yevamos, we had a machlokas of Abba Shol and the Chachamim about that. Abba Shol held according to this. If you don't do Yibum purely the Shem Mitzvah, then it's considered, Abba Shol said, as if Pigeya Be'erva, as if he's having relations with an Erva, whereas the Chachamim disagreed. So now, the Braisa that said that she's considered a Meredes is, so he's saying, let's do Yibum. She's refusing. The Braisa is going according to Missionary Shona. According to Missionary Shona, Yibum is the preferred thing to do. She doesn't want to do it, then she's a Meredes. Shmuel is telling us, according to Mishnah Achrona, that no, because nowadays, anyway, Yibum is the less preferred option, according to that Mishnah Achrona,
And then therefore, if she says, I don't want to do Yibum, then we can't consider her a Meredes because we just tell him, in that case, do Chalitza. That's really the preferred thing to do anyway. Now, we've learned about the Nirvamas. There's a big machlokas Rishonim, who the halacha is like in the end. Ultimately, is the halacha like a Mishnah Rishonah or like a Mishnah Achronah, like the Chachamim or like Abba Shol? So we said that, so the Rambam paskins like the Chachamim. The Tur and other Ashkenazic poskim paskin like Abba Shol, and the result is Ada Yemazeh. Ashkenazim rarely, if ever, do Yibum. Svaudim do it not very commonly, but it still happens among them in a way that it doesn't happen to Ashkenazim.
The fact that the Torah gives a choice to the woman to do either Yibum or Chalitza shows that she has the authority to decide. And no one can force her to make...
One second.
Let me finish a second.
Okay.
It proves that the woman has the choice to decide herself between Yibum and Chalitza.
I don't know where you're getting that the woman has the choice in the matter. We learned in Yevamos that actually Abba'al Yevimte, Ben B'Shogig, Ben B'Onus, whatever, he's still Koina. In principle, it doesn't depend on her. In principle, whatever the Yavam wants can get done, whether she likes it or not. Practically speaking, of course, if they want to have a happy marriage, it would be good if they both agree. But in principle, the Yavam can even be ma'anis for, and it would actually work. And it would, the Yavam would actually take effect.
Yeah. What do you mean? Against her will?
Yeah, that's what we learned in Yavamas. Habal, Yavimte, Ben Ba'onis, Ben Meshogi, Ben Memezit, etc. Yeah, he's kind of, yeah, in principle, he could. Remember that Midaraisa, you don't even need Kedushin. Midaraisa, all you need is Bia to accomplish Yibum. Midarabanan, you need Maimel first.
Right.
Okay. Anyway, let's go on.
And the children will be kosher?
Yeah, the children will be kosher, 100%. Yeah. Again, according to Abba Shol, not. If you're doing it not L'Shem Mitzvah, then it's Ke'ilu Pegeya Be'erva. But so again, whether the halacha is like Abba Shol or not, that's the question. Okay. The Mishnah had said, Ad Mosayu Poichas, we said, that if so, again, if she's a Meredes, so the Mishnah had said we start deducting week by week from Hoksova, and we said the amount is 7 dinarim according to the Tanna Kamma and 7 taupi'ikin or trapikin or however it's pronounced according to Rabbi Yehuda. Well, that's the Gemara says, my trapikin. What exactly are taupi'ikin? Amun of Shesh is istira. It means a coin that's called an istira, which is, Rashi says, a sela medina. Now, they used to have, we're going to talk about later in the Masechta, they used to have two different kinds of currency systems in those days. They had Kesef Tsuri, which is money that came from Tsur, from the city of Tyre in the north of Eretz Yisrael. That was pure, or almost pure silver. Then you had what was called Kesef Medina, which is where they had a system in Eretz Yisrael proper where they had coins that were 7/8 copper and only 1/8 silver. They still had the same denominations. So a dinner, it was still called a dinner, for example, but it was worth only 1/8 of what a dinner tsuri would be worth, because the dinner tsuri is pure silver, or almost pure silver, and the one from Eretz Yisrael was only 1/8 silver. So therefore, so an istira is a sela medina, which is 1/8 of it, which is 1/8 of a, which is one, which is, so it equals 1/8 of a sela tsuri, and the kama istira pauga de zuza. That comes out to be half of a zuz. So there are 4 zuz or dinar to the seller. So therefore, if a seller medina is 1/8 of a seller of tsur, then that means it comes out the equivalent of half a zuz or half a dinar of tsur. So therefore, in short, the Tanna Kamma is saying that it's a dinar per week, and Rabbi Yehuda is saying half that. The Gemara says Tani Nami Hochevil, and similarly in a Braisa, Rabbi Yehuda I'm a shloisha taupeikin. Rabbi Yehuda says the amount per week is 3 tarpeikin, shen tesha ma'in, which equals 9 ma'a, ma'a v'chetzi l'chol yom, it comes out a ma'a and a half every day, since there are 6 ma'a to the dinner. So it means, in other words, there are 6 ma'a to the dinner, so therefore it comes out that, so we're doing 1.5 dinner per day, which is half, it comes out, 1.5 ma'a per day, so it comes out that we're saying a half a dinner.
How many dinners a week?
So it comes out, according to Rabbi Yehuda, 3 dinner a week instead of, so it comes out, according to him, 3.5 dinner per week instead of 7, as the Tanakh would say. Okay, so the Gemara says, "Amalei Reb Chiya bar Yosef l'Shmuel, Maishna Ihud Yahvinin le the Shabbos." Now let's consider when she's meredes, and we're saying we're deducting from her ksuba, which means that her husband is gaining from it. Then we're including something for Shabbos. We're saying that 7 dinarim per week, or 3.5 according to Rabbi Yehuda. So if we break it down, it comes out to a dinner or a half a dinner every day. Or Maishna Ihi, what about, on the other hand, to give her when her husband is murdered, and we're saying we're increasing her ksuba, Delo Yavin and Lada Shabbos. There, we're not giving her anything for Shabbos. We're giving her three dinner, or according to Rabbi Yehuda, 3 tarpeikin per week, which comes out to a half a dinner, or a quarter of a dinner per day, and not including Shabbos, only for the 6 days of the week. Why is that? So the answer is, it's just a Shmuel answer is, the difference is because by her, it's getting diminished. Therefore, when the husband is gaining from it, it doesn't look like Schar Shabbos because we're not actually giving him money. We're just deducting from what he would otherwise have to pay. So therefore, so adding an extra dinner or half a dinner for Shabbos is not a big deal. On the other hand, when it comes to increasing the ksuba, when we're increasing huksuba by 3 dinner per week, or 3 half dinner per week, mechzik is chal Shabbos, then it has the appearance of paying for work on Shabbos, and you can't do that. Now, Tosfos actually points out, the fact is, the halacha is, you are allowed to get paid for work on Shabbos, b'havla, meaning where it's included in a larger amount. So let's say, for example, that a salary has been fixed, let's say on a monthly basis or something, and there are Shabbosim during that month, then that's fine. You just can't say that you're being paid individually for the Shabbosis. But here, Tosfos says, the fact is, we're not doing it by week. I mean, we said by week in the Mishnah, but really, when you get down to it, it's by day. What happens, for example, if she starts being meredes and then in the middle of the week, she changes her mind? We're not going to deduct for the whole week, of course. We're only deducting day by day. So therefore, so we have to consider Shabbos in the equation. Okay, so the Gemara says, Amalei Reb Chiya bar Yosef l'Shmuel, Ma ben murdered the meredes. What's the difference between a murdered and a meredes? Why is it that when he's murdered, he's only giving half the amount, he's only increasing her ksuba by half the amount per day that she's losing if she's meredes? So Shmuel answers, go and learn and consider what happens in the marketplace where Zonas sit. Me, who hires who? Do the Zonas hire the men? No, just the opposite. The men hire the Zonas. So in other words, the men have a greater when they're not having Tashmish, they feel it more, and therefore they feel like even more of a need to pay for it. The point is, in other words, therefore the husband is having the worst of it when his wife is being murdered from Tashmish more than the other way around. Another way of looking at it is the husband's yetzer is on the outside. He gets a kishur, and so therefore it becomes very obvious when he's aroused and it's embarrassing to him. Whereas hers is on the inside and it's not noticeable, and therefore that's another reason why he's having it worse than she is.
How we learned that a woman would rather be married.
A woman would rather be married, right? But as far as tashmish, the lack of it hurts the man more than the woman, we're saying. Yeah. There's a lot more as far as this post can talk about all kinds of different scenarios. What happens if a husband is beating his wife? What kinds of claims does she have against him? What kind of, and when does she have grounds to say that you have to divorce me? What about all kinds of other cases? What about where he's Roya Zonas himself, where he himself is going and then sleeping around on her, and all kinds of different cases that are discussed in Shulchan Aruch and in many places in Shiloh Satrova. So unfortunately, unfortunately, human nature being what it is, there's been many such cases. Yeah. Okay. Mishnah says, Hamashras Ishtayayde Shalish. Suppose a man is providing food for his wife through a third party. So they're not living together for whatever reason. One reason that Rishonim say, practically speaking, he may be away on business. We learned before, for example, you might have a donkey driver or a camel driver or whatever who is away out of town for a while at a time. So he's arranging with a third party that he's going to give her food through this shalosh. The word mashre, Rashi explains, comes from the Aramaic word for meal, is sherusa. So hamashre means that he's providing her her meals. So now if they were living and eating together, then we wouldn't bother with these minimum amounts of each kind of food that it says in the Mishnah, because whatever, they buy food for the household and everybody eats their portion. But here, where he's providing through a third party, then we need actual amounts, the minimums that he has to provide. So the Mishnah says, Lo yifchas l'mishnei kavin chitin, he has to make sure to give her not less than 2 kavim of wheat. And we're talking about per week, or 4 kavim of barley. And the Gemara says, and the Mishnah says, Amar Rabbi Yosi, like Pasuk Las Sa'urin El Rabbi Shmuel. Actually, it's only Rabbi Shmuel who would say that he gives her barley, Mishahayas Samoch L'Edrem, because Rabbi Shmuel lived near Edrem. Now, what does that mean? What does Edrem and barley have to do with anything? We'll see in the Gemara what Rabbi Yosi means by that. Next, the Mishnah continues, V'nosim L'chatzi Kav Kitnis. He has to give her per week a half kav of beans. A kav, by the way, is around 3 pounds. So you're talking, so far, you're talking 6 pounds of wheat, or 12 pounds of barley, about a pound and a half of beans. So this will last her for the week. A half a log of oil, which she'll use for things like dipping bread and also for lamp oil and whatever. The kav grogris and a kav of dried figs, or a mona of a cake of pressed figs, where they used to in the times of the Gemara, they had the gulei dvela, they would press figs together into a round cake, and then over time you'd break or cut off pieces of that and eat it. Interesting, by the way, that a kav is really a measure of volume. A mona is a measure of weight. So when it comes to the grogris, you go by volume. When it comes to the igul dvela, you go by weight. Shitimoku Betzis talks about that. He says, by the way, that the figs that they would use for making dvela are much juicier and fatter than the regular kind, so therefore he can get away with giving her less of that. So those are all the food items he has to give her. The Yerushalmi brings also, Rishonim bring from the Yerushalmi, that in addition he has to give her dishes to eat from and to cook in and so forth.
Yes.
No, not necessarily. So the point is, she's living apart from her husband. She may not have those things. He has to make sure to supply those. Rishonim say the Mishnah doesn't mention it because the Mishnah is focusing on the actual food itself, not on the things she needs to prepare and to eat food. Okay, continues the Mishnah. V'nosim mita, he also has to provide for her a bed. Mapatz machzelas, he has to provide her a mapatz and machzelas, which are both kinds of straw mats, except that Rashi says the mapatz is softer than the machzelas, so the machzelas would be like the equivalent of a box spring maybe, and the mapatz would be the equivalent of the actual mattress. Or there's the idea that some of the mafoshim say it means that if he can't afford one, then at least he has to give her the other one. So he has to provide those for her. V'noisen l'kipa l'roisha. He also has to provide her a tichel for her head. Rashi says it means once a year. Other rishonim learn, not necessarily once a year. Whenever it wears out, then he needs to get her a new one. V'chagur l'masneha. He needs to give her a belt for her waist because he's providing her clothing. That's a separate thing than what we're talking about over here. But besides that, when a woman is doing housework, sometimes she needs to hitch up her skirt so they don't get in the way while she's doing the work. So she needs a belt at that time. So he needs to provide that. Yeah, that's the point. Clothes then were very long and flowing. Yeah. So he needs to provide that. He has to provide her shoes every yomtiv. We'll see in the Gemara why is it the other things is only once a year and shoes is three times a year. We'll get to that in the Gemara tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem. The Kalim Shochamishim Zuz Mishana Lashana, and he has to provide her clothing worth 50 Zuz once a year. The Gemara is going to tell us that the Zuz we're talking about over here are the Kesef Medina that we were talking about before, which are 1/8 of Kesef Tzuri. So in terms of the usual monetary amounts that we usually discuss in the Gemara, it would actually be the equivalent of six and a little bit sloim. But there were six and a little bit zuzim, rather, six and a little bit dinim. But in terms of Kesef Medina, it was described as 50 because you multiply it by 8. Now he can't give her new clothing in the summertime because then it's hot and uncomfortable. New clothing is thicker after all. He can't give her worn out clothes in the winter because it won't keep her warm. What he does is he buys new clothes that are worth 50 zuz during the winter time. And she starts wearing them then, and then as they wear out, she can be wearing them during the summertime when she needs cooler clothing.
Why can't you give her thin new clothes in the summer?
Because then she won't have anything for the winter. So she needs some. So what we're talking about right now, we're talking about that he gives her, what we're talking about is he gives her clothing once a year. He gives her a new outfit once a year. So the way to do that is to make sure that outfit is good for winter wear. And then as it wears out, as it gets thinner, then it can be used for summer wear as well. Vashchokim shalom. And the Mishnah says the worn-out clothing belongs to her. So even he buys her new clothing, she can still keep the worn-out clothing and continue to wear it. The Gemara will tell us tomorrow why she needs it. If she has new clothing anyway, what's she need the old one? The Gemara is going to tell us she needs it for when she's nidya.
Because we also spoke about it before.
That was something else. We were talking about Blois before. That was when she brought in Nichsit Son Barzo. You were talking about the outfits that her husband is buying her once a year. And the Mishnah continues, Noisim a ma kesef l'tzarka. The husband also has to give her a ma, a silver ma, once a week for her needs. We learned this earlier in the Masech. We learned this earlier in the Perek. She uses it, for example, for occasional expenses. If she wants to go to the bathhouse, if she needs laundry done, that kind of thing. And she eats with him once a week on Shabbos night, which is, as we learned earlier in the parak, is the time of Oina. So we're going to see in the Gemara what Echelas means. There's two possibilities. It means that he has to be available to eat Friday night meal with her, or the Gemara says it can also mean a euphemism for Tashmish. So we'll get to that in the Gemara tomorrow. Now, if he doesn't give her this Mar Kesef for her needs, the Maisi Yodeh Shalah, then she gets to keep her Maisi Yodeh. We learned earlier in the parak, doesn't mean the actual Maisi Yodeh, that goes instead of Mizonis, it means Moiser Maisi Yodeh, the extra that she makes over and above what she usually makes. Umahi Oisaloi, so what's the expected amount of Maisi Yodeh that she should be producing for the family income? Mishka Chomish Sloim Shesi Bihoda. If it would be the weight of 5 sloims worth of Shesi thread of Yehuda Sloim. Shesi thread is what you stretch out on the loom from one roller to the other. It's thinner than 8 of thread, therefore it's harder to make. So she has to produce 5 sloim of that, chain S of sloim begalo, which would be the equivalent of 10 sloim in the Galil, because their sloim were half the size of the ones in Yehuda. Oy Mishkal Esav Sloim 8 of Yehuda, or if she can produce 8 of thread instead, and then she'd have to produce 10 sloims worth in Yehuda, chain Esrim Sloim Begalo, which would be 20 sloim in the Galil, because 8 of thread being thicker is easier to make, so therefore she can be making more of it. That's how I think the Meiri explains. Next, Vim Hoysim Nika, if she's nursing a baby, then we reduce the amount of Maisi Adair she has to produce. She's busy taking care of the baby, so she can't be producing 5 or 10 sloim of thread every day. The husband has to add to the amount of mizonis that he gives her because she needs extra food in order to nurse the baby. And the Mishnah finishes off, when is all this talking about? But oni should be shiro. When you have a poor year, these are the minimum amounts. But if he's an honorable person and he can afford more, hakol lefi kvoda, then goes according to his cupboard, because if you learned earlier in the parak, oila imevet yeredasima, she goes up in status with him, she never goes down with him. Okay, the Gemara says, mani masnisin. Now our Mishnah that says, let's start with the first part of our Mishnah that says that he gives her 2 kavim of wheat per week. And the idea is she'll grind up that wheat and she'll make bread out of it. But who does our Mishnah go like that says that the amount to eat per week is 2 kavim? Loi Rabbi Yochanan ben Breuka v'loi Rabbi Shimon. It doesn't seem to be like Rabbi Yochanan ben Breuka or like Rabbi Shimon who addressed this matter of how large a loaf of bread is supposed to be in terms of the halachas of Eruvin. D'tnan, we learn in a Mishnah in Eruvin that we have. So you have Eruve Chatzeris that you have a loaf of bread that everybody in the chotzer is considered has a share in, and that way they can carry in the chotzer on Shabbos. So Bakamashire, what's the size? It has to be enough to provide 2 meals worth for every person who lives in the chotzer. Now Reb Meir says that means we're talking in terms of the amount of food, the amount of bread that a person would eat on weekdays, not on Shabbos. Rabbi Yehuda says the other way around, the amount you eat on Shabbos, not the amount on weekdays. Both Reb Meir and Rabbi Yehuda are trying to be mateful. Reb Meir, Rashi says, on Shabbos, he would eat more bread than on weekdays because you have all the different other foods on the table and he would eat bread with each one of them. So therefore, he winds up eating more bread. Rabbi Yehuda would do the other way around. He would eat more of the other things that are on the table on Shabbos without bread, and then he'd fill up on those. So therefore, on weekdays, he'd end up eating more bread than on Shabbos. So the mayor, who's saying that we go according to the weekdays, is saying that you do according to the lesser amount. And Rabbi Yehuda, who says you go according to Shabbos, is also saying let's go according to the lesser amount. Anyway, so what is the actual amount? What's the actual amount that a person eats for that a person eats for two meals? Rabbi Yechonman Breipomer, Kiko Halakuach Bapunyan. The way we figure it out, we take a loaf of bread that can be bought for a punyan me'arba se'in l'sela when the cost of wheat is 4 sa per seller. Now there are 48 punyonin in a seller. So therefore, so if you're able to, so a loaf, at this point, the Gemara is not dealing with the matter of profit or anything. We're going to deal with that soon. Right now, the Gemara is assuming we just take the 4 sa. Now, a sa contains 6 calves. So therefore, 4 sa of wheat is 24 kavim. So if you can buy 24 kavim for a seller, which is 48 pundyonin, then it comes out that each loaf of bread that you make from it is half a calf. Now, our Mishnah had said 2 kavim for the week, so look, we're going to figure that out soon. Reb Shimon, I'm a shtei yodis lekicker, mishalosh kikris lekav. Reb Shimon says differently. You take a calf of wheat, you make 3 loaves of bread out of it, and so each loaf is 1/3 of a calf. 2/3 of that, 2/3 of such a loaf is considered the loaf that we're just considered the loaf of bread that we're talking about. And the Mishnah continues, half of that amount. Rabbi Yechonman Berke and Rabbi Shimon are disagreeing on the size of the loaf of bread. But they within that, they're saying each one taking what I say is the size of a loaf of bread. Then if we divide that down, then we have a half of that. If a person eats that, half of that, the amount of time it takes to eat half of that is the amount that if a person goes into a house that has tzaras, then not only he will become tummy, but so will his clothes. So we know if a person goes into a house with tzaras, he becomes tamei right away. His clothes become tamei only if he stays there a certain amount of time. The amount of time is kedei achilas pras. This is where we get the concept of achilas pras throughout Shas. So pras means a half. So it means Rabbi Yechonman Breka is saying, take the size of the loaf of bread that I said, divide that in half. The amount of time it takes to eat that is the amount of time that if a person stays in a house with tzaras, he becomes tamei. Rabbi Shimon says the same thing. Take half of the size of the loaf that I said and do the same thing. Then they continue. Then a half of that half of a pras would be the amount that if a person eats it and the food is tame, that his body becomes tame, d'rabbanan, and he can't eat truma or kodshim until he toils. And half of that half of the original half, which comes out according to Rabbi Yechonman Breika, comes out to a kebetza, and according to Rabbi Shimon, comes out a bit less than that, is the amount lekabel tumas oichlin to become tamei with the tumah of food. Now here you have a famous machlokas between Rashi and the Rambam on the other hand, and Tosfos on the other hand. Does that mean that only a kebetza of food at a time can become tamei? Rashi and the Rambam learn that no, they say any amount of food can become tamei. The kebetza over here is to make other food tamei. Tosfos, on the other hand, learns that even for the food itself to become tamei, you would need a kebetza.
Doesn't matter if it's never become wet,
then it's not going to be kabel tumah anyway. We're not talking about that. Okay, so now that we established that, so money. So now let's get back to our Mishnah. Who is our Mishnah like? According to Rabbi Yechonman Breka, you wind up out of 2 kavim of wheat. You get only 8 meals. We need 14 meals for an entire week because you need 2 meals per day. Because according to him, we're saying you have 2 kavim. According to Rabbi Yechonman Breka, the amount of the 2 sudas is he says that 2 sudas is a half a kav. So that means 1 suda is a quarter of a kav. So then out of 2 kavim, you're only getting 8 meals. What is she doing for the other 6 meals? And v'irab Shimon tamni sirei havyan. And according to Rabbi Shimon, you're ending up with 18 meals, but she only needs 14 meals for the week. Where what does she need 4 extra meals worth of bread for?
Yes.
Well, that's the Gemara is going to mention guests soon. So the Gemara says, we can answer that in fact our Mishnah is like Rabbi Yechonman Breka. Rav Chista points out in the Gemara there in Erevin, you have to deduct 1/3 for the storekeeper. In other words, the storekeeper, the one who's selling the bread, he bought 4 sa of wheat for the seller, but he has to make a profit. So we have to consider his profit. So therefore. So when Rabbi Yechonman Breka was saying that out of a half a cab, what it's not that out of half a cab you get 3 meals, you get 2 meals, you get 3 meals. What he does is he sells 2 of them for a punyan, and the 3rd one is his profit. So therefore, it comes out according to Rabbi Yechonman Breka, you're getting 3 meals out of every cab. Well, then that increases the amount that we're dealing with over here. So therefore, Hachanami, I see tilta shodi alayu. The same thing. You're saying, according to Rabbi Yechon ben Breka, with the amounts we said before, you'd end up with only 8 meals. Add another third. So therefore, you see, Rabbi says, Akati taikis today have yen. You're only up to 12. How does that help us? You need 14 meals for the week. 15, even if you consider Shalosh Shodas on Shabbos. And the answer is, okay, but the answer is, she's eating with him on Friday night. So then he doesn't have to provide for that, because then they're eating together. So he doesn't have to provide separate food for that. Then we're just going to buy food for the two of them together. What we're talking about over here, remember, is they're living apart and he's providing for through a shalish, but for the Friday night meal, he doesn't need to. So the Gemara says, first of all, okay, that works out according to the opinion, which we'll learn in the Gemara tomorrow, that when it says Echelas Imay, it means they actually eat together Friday night. But we have the other opinion that says that eating together is a euphemism for he has to be available for Tashmish. So they're not necessarily even eating the Friday night meal together. But then what are you going to say? And even so, even if you're going to say it means they eat together twice or have them, you've still only accounted for 13 meals, 12 that he's providing her out of the two kavim of wheat. One more that they're eating together. Let's say they are eating together. Still, that's only 13. You need at least 14 meals. So rather, we can answer like a different statement of Rav Chista that says you have to deduct half for the storekeeper, meaning the storekeeper's profit has to be larger. It's not enough for him to make a profit where he's selling two of the loaves for a punyan and the third one represents his profit. You have to have that he sells two of them for a punyan and two of them are his profit. So now if we calculate it that way, which the Gemara is going to ask in a minute, so then Rav Chista is contradicting himself. Is the storekeeper's profit a third or a half? We'll get back to that in a minute. But the point is that the same thing. So the same thing over here. What we're doing is we're taking half and applying it. So we don't end up with 8. We end up with 16 meals. So therefore, that's more than enough. Well, the Gemara asks, Kasha de Rav Chista de Rav Chista. Isn't Rav Chista contradicting himself? Is the storekeeper's profit one third or a half? The answer is like Kasha, Hod Ba'astra de Yahavit Sibi, Hod Ba'astra de la Yahavit Sibi. It depends whether it's a place where the person who's buying the bread from him is supplying the wood or not. Or not the person who's buying the bread, rather. Now she says the one who sells the wheat to the chenveni, where the chenveni is now going to be making bread out of it, is he also providing wood? So then the storekeeper's profit doesn't need to be as big, because then he doesn't need to provide his own wood supply. Then his profit can be only one third, as opposed to if he himself has to also provide wood, then he needs a larger profit because he needs to be able to account for that expense as well. Okay, so the Gemara says Yehochi Shitzrei Havion. Okay, but now we're up to 16. The fact is, she only needs 14. Would we say then that this has to be like Reb Chidka, the Amar Arba Sudas Chai Vadim Lach on Shabbos? He says a person has to eat 4 meals on Shabbos, so therefore you'd have 12 for the 6 days of the week and 4 for Shabbos, which would equal 16.
Friday night,
Shabbos, he would be like this. We have Friday, Shabbos day, and Shalosh Shodas. He would say there has to be an additional one sometime during Shabbos. What? No, Malav Malka is already after Shabbos. That would already count for Sunday. No, he's talking about that in the morning. Let's say Shabbos morning, according to him, you'd have to have a separate Suda. Yeah. Would we say that our Mishnah is like Rav Chidka? And the answer is not necessarily. I feel the Tamer Rabbanan. You could say that our Mishnah works like Nafachamim. Dal Chodel Orchi Uporchi. You have to deduct one. She's going to have guests sometimes, so then she has to be able to provide for them. And by the way, Mephoshim point out, it's not like the husband really has to provide her money for tzedakah, but the fact is, you know, if he's going to be providing her food, of necessity, there are going to be guests, so you have to account for them. So the Gemara says, Hashtag Osis Lahochi. Well, you know what? Now that you reach that point, Afilu Tamer Reb Shimon, you could even make our Mishnah work according to Reb Shimon, who said that the amount we started with was 18 meals. According to him, we don't have to worry about the storekeeper's profit or anything. According to his calculation, we got 18 meals out of two kavim, nine meals per kav. So dal tlas la'ochi u'porchi. So the rabbanon dal tlas la'ochi u'porchi. According to the chachamim, you would say she has 18 meals worth of food. Three of them are available for the guests, and the other 15 covers two meals a day for her, and three on Shabbos, which is 15 meals for her. L'rabchitka dal tauti la'ochi u'porchi. And according to the rabchitka, we can deduct two that are available for the guests, and she has 16. So therefore,
why doesn't the chemi
need to get? So not that he's saying he doesn't get any money, but according to Reb Shimon, we're not counting that. When we say that wheat is being sold at 4 saw to the seller, we're already considering what the chemini, yeah, we're already considering the chemini's profit and all that.
Yeah,
so it's all included, and therefore he says you can get 18 meals worth out of two cattle. The machloikas of just worth mentioning, this machloikas of Rabbi Yechon ben Broika and Rabbi Shimon is another one of those machloikas and that was never resolved. And the result is you have two different opinions. What's the amount of a pras? When we say kedei achilas pras, is it according to their various calculations? It comes out a loaf that contains either three or four beitzim. There are four beitzim to the lug. There are four beitzim to the lug and four lugim, no, I'm getting it wrong. Whatever. There's 24 beitzim to the calf. So if you calculate according to their various things, you get either three or four beitzim, and that is both of those opinions are brought in Shulchan Aruch, and that's part of the question of how much kedei achilas pras is. We have numbers all over the map as far as number of minutes. Part of it begins with the question of, are we talking about the amount of time it takes to eat 3 eggs worth of bread or 4 eggs worth, depending whether we go according to the Yechon ben Broika or according to the Pshim. Well, yeah, but we're talking about the way the average person would eat. The Gemara also mentions in connection with the Bais HaManuga that it has to be Mesa, where he's reclining, and then a person eats faster because then he's more comfortable. But Oichle Beliftan, he's eating with some kind of condiment, which makes it more comfortable to eat. So yeah, but then based on that is how we determine the Achilles Pras for many areas in Halacha.